Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and happy to start the program today by talking with you about birds and art. Birds give you and I the opportunity to connect in a special way. It's amazing how bird events can spark conversation, bring people together to learn more about the avian world, and we're going to talk about that today. We're joined by two special guests who are going to visit about their experiences at a Wisconsin bird exhibition and also talk a bit more about birds themselves. And Alan Haney is one of our guests, wildlife ecologist, University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, emeritus professor, College of Natural Resources former dean. And he is also the author of a book we'll discuss a bit today. It's called Jewels of Nature. And joining us today from our studios in Wausau, Alan, are you there?
I am. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. Katie Anderson with you as well, I believe, who is the Museum Curator of Education at the Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum. And Katie, glad to have you spend time with us today as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
We appreciate it very much. You're a little off mic, so maybe you can get a little closer to the microphone there. Then we'll be in better shape. But earlier this year, just a few weeks back, I talked with the author of the book Birdwatcher, and it's the story of Roger Torrey Peterson. And I was reminded as I was thinking about doing this show that Roger kind of played a role right at the start in your special event called Birds and Art.
Mm-hmm, he did, yes. Roger Torrey Peterson was honored as a master wildlife artist at the museum and was one of those early, really important figures connected with the exhibition and bringing that group of incredibly talented and diverse artists together early when the exhibition began.
And here it is, what, 40 years later?
That's right. We're celebrating 40 years of the museum and the Birds and Art exhibition.
I have to tell you, it is one of my favorite museums. I love visiting.
Thank you.
the museum. It is so. It's a joy every time I go. There's something new and something different to look at and to see and just experiencing just the whole setting and every as listeners, if you haven't visited the Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum in Wausau, you ought to make a special pilgrimage to go and see it because it is just an absolutely wonderful, wonderful place. And the special event is called Birds and Art, and going on 40 years. So that's got to say something about birding and its popularity, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think so. It's it was almost a surprise to the founders of the museum when that theme of an exhibition rolled out in 1976 under a different title, Birds of the Lakes, Fields, and Forests. And, of course, that was co-curated with museum staff and Owen Grammy, celebrated Wisconsin painter and actually curator, former curator at the Milwaukee Public Museum, and that theme, that presentation of that flagship exhibition was expected to draw crowds in the hundreds, and thousands flocked to the museum, and that was a very pleasant, wonderful surprise, and one that the Woodson embraced and continued that tradition, and it's incredible to see really, truly how diverse, vast, expansive that audience of bird lovers, of art lovers really is, and the connections between the two.
Larry, it's probably worth noting, too, that birding is the most actively growing, most rapidly growing outdoor activity in the United States. And I suspect that may be true in Europe, too, although I haven't seen those figures. But this is an area that seems to attract more and more attention from the public all the time.
And in Europe, especially, I remember interviewing a fellow from England, a birder from England, and asking about how he had gotten started in birding. And he said, well, really, in England, there wasn't much hunting. And so he got a lot of males, especially males, get started early on birding and photography because they're not hunting. They're hunting with a camera.
Yeah, and I think that's increasing as well. Although it's interesting, I just walked through the Birds and Art exhibition this morning, and it's interesting to see the wide variety of different species that are displayed there, everything from a lot of African species to probably more of an emphasis on our native birds, but a lot of waterfowl, including a lot of still lifes of waterfowl that have been harvested.
Well, let's talk, you know, maybe... Katie, you could talk a bit more about the specifics of that while we're at it. Alan's mentioning some of the broad range, but give us a little more detail on what we're going to see. I know on your website, by the way, we have a link on our Facebook page, the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, to the museum. But talk a bit more about the kinds of art
Sure.
that are part of this exhibit.
Well, I think one of the greatest strengths of the Birds and Art exhibition really is how dynamic it is in terms of not only the diversity of its subjects, but the diversity of the perspective of all of these artists really representing this global audience of bird lovers and artists. And so we have, you know, 29 international artists. They're representing 13 countries from around the world. So automatically you're going to have a really beautiful broad brushstroke of the avian world with regard to species, but the works themselves, of course, are also just as diverse in their styles, their aesthetics, their mediums. And so we have wonderful representation of sculptures, bronzes, stone carving, works in metal, works in wood, and then, of course, beautiful drawings, illustrations, graphite, charcoal, and paintings, prints. So the pretty much range of visual arts is proudly on display as well, and the quality is just incredible. But the subjects presented anywhere from, you know, really minimalist depictions in sculpture to highly representational photorealist paintings of subjects in their natural environment, some in still life, as Alan just mentioned as well. So it's truly a walk through the avian world, but also the kind of canon of American natural, you know, works of art and styles that they're presented in.
Well, it's really so. I'm really looking forward to getting up there. And the nice thing, for me anyway, is that the exhibit takes place over, you know, it's not just a weekend.
No, thankfully not.
Yeah, thankfully not. It's it's on until November, end of November, isn't it?
Correct. Yes, November 29th. That's right.
And I haven't been up there yet, so I'm really looking forward to getting up there. And Alan, you're going to be presenting talks as part of the Wisconsin Science Festival, which is pretty cool as well.
Yes, in fact, I think that at least two of these things that are coming up this week will delve a little deeper into some of the science related to birds and bird behavior and so forth than many of the other presentations, which are more artistically focused. But beginning tomorrow night, I'm going to be talking about some specific bird species that are common to central Wisconsin and talking about their behavior and other things. One of the important points is that birds are really an indicator of what's happening in our environment. And because of their high metabolism, short lifestyle, and so forth, and the fact that they're adapted to virtually every habitat you can imagine, birds give us a rather quick index of some of the kinds of stresses that all wild creatures are beginning to experience as we look down the road. And so I'll talk a little bit about that tomorrow night. But on Friday night, we're going to go into that in some detail, where we have a panel, three of us will, from Stevens Point, will be talking about the past, the present, and the future with regard to birds and how habitats have changed. So those two presentations particularly will look a little bit more into the science of birds and what they tell us.
And are those are open to the public? Are they?
Yes, they are.
Indeed they are.
So tell us a bit more about, Katie, why don't you get in there and give us the specifics on that?
Sure.
We'll mention it now, and we'll make sure that I mention it again toward the end of our conversation, okay?
Yeah, you bet. We have, so the first talk, which is tomorrow evening, every Thursday during Birds and Art, the museum is open well into the evening. We have hours open until 7:30 p.m. And so 5:30 to 6:30, we have Alan presenting his avian anecdotes. And again, as he mentioned, looking at some of the regional species. And then Friday, we have from 6 to 7:30, Great Lakes Avian Ecology. And that is the panel discussion with some former colleagues at Point and Eric Anderson and Ray Reeser at the Natural History Museum. And that's looking at that past, present, and future.
Well, so that should be really interesting and a lot of fun as well, because you got some people there who know how to talk, too.
Absolutely.
They're good speakers, I know for a fact. Well, that's going to be really interesting and a lot of fun. And you just show up, or do you sign up ahead, or what do?
You just show up. You just come on by the museum, and we always free to stop on in and drop by, grab a seat, and enjoy. And then, of course, there's also Saturday programs as well that Alan will be offering. So some more geared towards families, actually, and budding young birders.
Yeah.
Well, Larry, we might want to point out, too, that the program tomorrow night begins at 5:30, and the one Friday night begins at 6 o'clock. So those are fairly early evening activities, and they will be full of information, I'm sure.
Yeah. What kinds of... You know, an events like this, the Birds and Art exhibit, the presentations, what kinds of discussions can come from events like this?
Well, I think one of the things that, as one of the educators at the museum, I'm always seeking to do is present opportunities for interdisciplinary conversations. And, you know, the wider we cast our net to reach audiences, whether it's through natural history and the sciences and field work, field biology, conservation efforts, and then we are marrying that with audiences that are really have a keen interest in the visual arts, really wonderful conversations result. And whether it's looking at a specific species that may be endangered and viewing it through a collection of artworks and kind of comparing that to situations in the field, in life, it's always fun when you get like-minded people with a love of birds, but maybe from different disciplines or fields, talking. I think fun stuff happens.
And there is so much information that the general public has about birds. You know, when you consider that so many people maintain bird feeders and are active bird watchers, they're always seeing things, observing new species, observing migration, observing behavior, and bringing that information together to share those experiences is very rich.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Talking today with Alan Haney, wildlife ecologist, University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point Emeritus Professor, former Dean of the College of Natural Resources, and is the author of the book Jewels of Nature. And I want to talk with him some more about that book as well, because it's a fun book for sure. Katie Anderson, Museum Curator of Education at the Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum. And we're kind of talking about the special events that are coming up. Actually, October 22nd and 23rd and 24th, and also about the 40th annual anniversary Birds and Art exhibition on view and really until the end of November. You may have visited the exhibition. Maybe you've been to it. Maybe you've had an experience to share that with us from the Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum. Love to hear from you. Or maybe you've got a birding question as well. The number 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mealer Show Facebook page and you can post right there. I'm Larry Mealer. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, visiting with wildlife ecologist Alan Haney from the UW-Stevens Point and Katie Anderson, Museum Curator of Education at the Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum, talking about the 40th anniversary Birds and Art exhibition with them, and certainly inviting your questions and comments or maybe your experiences to share from the museum or from the exhibition. Number 1-800-642-1234. email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mealer Show Facebook page, post your questions and comments there. And let's go to Penny in Wisconsin Rapids. Penny, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Alan. I thought I would tell a little story about Alan's book, which I bought last year. And he has little stories, short stories about lots of different birds. And in the springtime section, I was reading a story about a woodcock. And I'm a new birder, and I had never seen a woodcock. I never heard one before, so I read about it, and he talked about the spiraling upward flight of the woodcock, and I was like, wow, I'd love to see that. I wonder what a woodcock sounds like. So I got on the internet and I listened to it, and it was surprising to me because it sounds to me like a frog, and it goes weak, kind of like that. And I thought, I've heard that before on my land when I go for a walk in the evening. I've heard that noise. And I thought it was a frog the whole time until I read Alan's book. And we happen to have a woodcock in our backyard.
Ah.
And so it was just really cool to know there was something that close to me and that I got to discover it thanks to Alan's book.
Oh, what a great story, Penny. Thank you for calling. And Alan, you've got to have a comment.
Thank you, Penny.
Sure.
Woodcocks are becoming less common, but partly because of loss of habitat and so forth. But that's still a species that we can see throughout, pretty much throughout the state. And, of course, they're migratory. They're here beginning in the spring, usually by late April into May, they arrive. And this is a bird that feeds primarily in damp ground, often near the edge of swamps and so forth. And it feeds primarily on invertebrates, worms, and whatnot, which is its specialty. But it's the mating that Penny described that is just hilarious in this species. It's very remarkable and certainly worth looking at if you have a chance to be on an area where they are mating in the spring.
Thank you, Penny.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, that was a wonderful story. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. And I have to sort of echo her. I'm really enjoying your book. It's a great book. It's first place, it's beautiful. You guys have beautiful photography, but your stories are just wonderful.
Well, thanks, Larry. Well, the book came about rather serendipitously, but for several years I've been writing a story for each of the monthly newsletters that the Alda Leopold Audubon Society publishes. And these have accumulated over the years with each monthly edition. And several people ask if it wouldn't be possible eventually to compile these into a book. And that's how it really got started. We added a dozen or so new stories to it to round out the book. And it now covers 92 species. Most of these are birds that are frequently seen in central Wisconsin, as well as many other places, of course. But some of them also highlight some of our special winter migrants and those that visit us only at certain times of the year, like the snowy owl, great gray owl, and some of those species. But each story is about a bird with which I've had a personal experience, and I can share some of the anecdotes, including humor, as well as interesting aspects of their behavior and some of the other interesting facts associated with those species. And each story is a short read. It takes maybe no more than 10, 15 minutes, and you've got a pretty good grasp of that species that you may be seeing on your feeder or in your backyard or somewhere in your walking in the natural areas around the state.
It really is a lot of fun to read through the book, and you really have some fun. It's some great stories to tell, and so you're right about you got some funny ones in there. But I really like the fact that there are really great nuggets of information that people don't probably think about very often. I hadn't thought about it a bit, but you learn about the fact that larger birds more often have long-term pair bonding, as an example.
Mm-hmm. That's a good rule. There, in fact, many of our larger birds mate for life. It's not too uncommon. Most of our smaller passerines, the birds that the perching birds that we are very familiar with, usually pair up for only a season, and most of those have very low fidelity to their mate as well. So there's a lot of carrying on amongst the birds, and that's another curious characteristic of the birds. It probably is important to help maintain the diversity in the gene pool, in fact. And it's not uncommon for a nest of young birds to have been fathered by two or three and sometimes four fathers and sometimes by more than one mother.
And but typically, I think, as you point out in more than one story, the males, once the father, he might not even be the father of all the little birds in the nest, but he'll do a good job of helping the mom out.
Absolutely. That's the other thing, is that the fathers are devoted to all those young in the nest. I don't know of a single exception of where there is neglect of those offspring. The one exception would be where the brown-headed cowbird will sneak in and lay an egg, and that cowbird chick sometimes is seen as a foreigner in the nest, but usually not. Once the cowbird egg hatches and that cowbird chick is there, most of the parents will continue to feed that chick, even neglecting their own because of the more precocious and demanding characteristics of the cowbird chick.
Yeah. Well, we have lots of callers online. Jim in Lake City, Minnesota, let's turn to you next. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Larry. I just wanted to say a few words about the Leoki Woods and Art Museum. We lived in central Wisconsin for a number of years, and we went to the Birds and Art, and last week we made a trip over for the day to go, and it's just a wonderful experience every year with all of the artists from all over the world and different birds and different formats, carving, bronze, paintings of all different kinds of textures and colors, and it's just a wonderful place. And I don't know if you talked about this before, but the exhibit is actually free to the public, and it's kind of like public radio. You can have a membership, or you can make a donation.
Nice connection. There,
or you can, but it doesn't. There's no cost to coming in and seeing a wonderful exhibit. And with a new addition that was put on a couple of years ago, that houses in the off season or whatever, when the Owen Grumme collection is there, that's the permanent home of the Owen Grumme's originals. Mm-hmm. I believe in, and right now there's a wonderful exhibit in that area with Wyeth and can't remember who the other one is, but
Audubon, John James Audubon.
Audubon and, mm-hmm. and what? Just a terrific museum, and the people, and we go back every year, and the volunteers and the people that work there are just great about explaining things and inviting you in, and great. A great outdoor exhibit, too, in the yard.
I love that exhibit, too.
Yeah.
Thank you,
I just wanted to say that we just thoroughly enjoy it every year and hope that that other people, and I know other people do, too, but it's just for anybody who hasn't been there, it's just a wonderful experience.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Jim, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call, and he's absolutely right. I mean, this exhibit goes on till the end of November, but, you know, things are going on year-round there.
Absolutely. Changing exhibitions and programming. It's always fresh and always something new to see, but we really love hearing all of the stories of annual migrations to the Birds and Art exhibition. That always makes us happy. And so thanks for coming back and keep coming back.
Yeah, the birds migrate, and so do a lot of
so do the visitors. That's so right.
A lot of the visitors, including myself, I've always enjoyed stopping in and seeing the exhibit. And the setting is just so nice to begin with. It's just wonderful. Many callers online with several questions relating to birds, which is certainly fine and certainly right up Alan's alley. So let's go there to Lee in Green Bay. Hi, Lee. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning. I would just like the guests to comment on some of the kind of detrimental farming practices today. We've got all this GMO-modified corn, soybeans. They've got to plant every square inch in the field. There doesn't seem to be much left anymore with windrows or fence rows. And how this kills off the insects.
And how it may kill our and habitat, I would think, as well, possibly. Alan, you want to comment on that?
Yes, in fact, thanks for that observation and question. We're going to be delving into that in detail on Friday night at the panel. But, of course, if we look at the landscape of central Wisconsin today, and we certainly are in better shape than lots of areas in the country where there's been greater modification, but we still have a vast amount of the area that was once a natural area, prairie, savannas, forest, wetlands even, that are no longer in that natural habitat and which have been converted to completely artificial or at least quite different habitats than what the birds originally experienced. And it's primarily because of that, coupled to the added stress of climate change that has resulted in so many of our species becoming quite rare. Particularly grassland birds are being hit especially hard from the loss of prairie. We have perhaps less than 1% of the grasslands left that we once had in this area. And likewise with savanna, an open forested grassland, less than 1%. And so those species that adapted to those habitats have suffered especially hard. We do have a few species that seem to do okay with the kind of agriculture we have in central Wisconsin, things like the indigo bunting, for example. It's a edge species, a species that utilizes old brushy edge type of places. And it's true that clean fence rows probably damage its habitat to some extent. It's able to take advantage of some of the areas that are associated with the marginal agriculture around the fringe. And we do have some of those species. But for the most part, birds are in serious trouble. And a study that was completed last year by the National Audubon Society documented quite clearly that given present trends, we could lose as many as a third to perhaps as many as half of our bird species by the end of this century if we continue on the same trend without protecting some of these important habitats.
Wow. That's amazing. Lee, thanks so much for calling. I appreciate your call. This is kind of some of the, you know, this may be part of the conversation, especially, I would think, Friday night.
Yes, indeed. That's when we'll talk primarily about that particular aspect of the changes that have occurred and how it's going to continue to change into the future based on climate models and so forth. And it's we're particularly delighted to have Ray Reeser, who's an anthropologist, join us because he can look backwards at some of the ways in which birds were interacted with people in the past and how the habitats of the past have given way to what we see now.
Gary in Madison has a question for you, so let's go there. Gary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah, the reason I'm calling is I continue to see doves, and I'm just kind of wanting to know what their kind of like what their pattern is, because sometimes I see them, you know, quite often and not for a long time, and then I see them again.
Now, are you talking about your backyard? Or
Yes. Mm-hmm. My backyard, and I don't know how to determine if they're male or female, but they're a pretty interesting bird to watch. They're a lot different than the others. And is there something particular that they like to eat?
Well, the doves actually cater to the feeders quite well, particularly sunflower seed. They're quite fond of sunflower seed, but they eat a variety of different seeds, and that's their primary diet. Doves, of course, is a game bird in Wisconsin now. That came to the consternation of a lot of folks who felt like it was probably not necessary to add them to the list of game animals. But at any rate, that doesn't seem to have had very much effect. So on the positive side, hunting doesn't seem to take a heavy toll on the population. So the mourning dove, which is the species that we're referring to, is actually doing very, very well in our area. In fact, throughout its range, it seems to be holding its own quite well. This is a relative, however, of the passenger pigeon, of course, which has been extinct since 1913. And so it's possible for a species that is greatly abundant to be exploited and to actually go downhill rather quickly and lead to extinction. But in this case, the dove seems to be adapted to the all semi-urban, rural, agricultural kind of communities, and is another species that seems to be doing quite well. It's a species that it's a little surprising to me that it is doing so well, not so much because of its hunting, which doesn't seem to have much effect, but it's probably one of the poorest nesters of any bird that we have. Their nests are little more than a few sticks laid on a limb, and I very often find dove eggs on the ground broken because they simply fell through the nest. But one way or the other, they get the job done.
Was the entire year here in central Wisconsin?
I'm sorry?
Was it a bad year?
No, do they stay here all year?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed, they do. They are not migratory. At least those that nest in our area tend to hang around. But what happens is that the doves from more northern habitats will move south a little bit. And so we may actually get more doves coming into our area in the wintertime because those from the northern part of the state and even further north will move down into this region for the winter. So I think our populations probably are built up a little bit in the winter compared to what they are in the summer.
Oh, interesting. Thanks, Gary, for calling. And Lynn and Coloma, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning. I have a question between chickadees, little black-capped chickadees, and nuthatches. And my husband said he was out working in the front yard. We live in a pine and oak forest. And they were going to the bird feeder, and he said that they were then flying over and sticking the seeds up underneath the bark in the pine trees. And I said, well, that sounds more like a nuthatch than a chickadee. But he's actually been able to stand out there with seed, you know, sunflower seed, in his hands, and they've flown down and eaten right out of his hand.
Chickadees are notorious for that. They're very, very friendly birds, and it's not hard at all to get one to take seed from your hand. They do cache seeds, much as the nuthatches do, and, of course, all the woodpeckers and many other species cache various things, including occasionally insects. But sunflower seeds seem to lend themselves nicely to being cached that way into any crevice or hole or bark that the bird can find. And I think I wouldn't say it's the common thing for birds to do, but when you think about birds that are going to be spending the winter here, it probably makes good sense for them when there's an abundance of food to try and preserve some of that food in whatever way they can, and that usually means caching seeds or sometimes caching other things that they can then eat during the hardest part of the winter.
Are they the ones that they kind of go up and down the tree looking for insects a lot like little woodpeckers do?
That's right. The nuthatches feed down the stem of the tree, or always pointed down. Even when they land on my feeder, they land upside down with their head pointed down. And you'll notice that their head kind of tilts back and their beak kind of turns up so that they're adapted to be able to see potential predators even when they're upside down that way. And they've evolved that strategy, which probably exposes insects or other things that they might eat that birds that ordinarily would feed up the trunk might miss. So it simply gives them an opportunity to exploit a resource that others may have overlooked.
Thanks so much for calling, Lynn. Appreciate your call. And, you know, Katie, as we're talking here about these birds, I got thinking about the wood-carved birds that I have at home. I have, I don't know, 50 or 60 types of duck decoys that have been carved by various people. I have some owls that Bob Googie did, and an ivory bill that he did, and a red-headed woodpecker, and so forth. And so I always love, when I come to Lee Yawkey Woods and Art Museum, I love to come and see the wood carvings, and I bet you've got some nice ones for exhibit this year.
Absolutely, and you are in good company. There are lots of fans of the carvings in wood, and so we have Larry Barth, of course. We have Todd Wolt. Lots of lovely examples of that beautiful realist carving in the wood, and all of the really intricate processes that go into achieving that kind of trompe l'oeil effect in the wood are quite impressive too. And You know, everything from pyrography, wood burning, to meticulous small layers of paint, to metal work, and playing with patinas. It's really fascinating work and quite impressive, the skill set required by lots of these artists to create not only that, you know, super realistic bird, which students in the galleries are always saying that, insisting is real, but
well,
also
real.
That environment, yeah, the suggestion of the environment with those sculptural bases and habitat is really, really lovely to see as well. And we have, as always, wonderful examples of that.
Yeah, and, you know, I was talking with someone the other day who said, any of this, are any of these works of art, of can you buy them? And I said, well, I don't think you can buy them during the art exhibit.
That's an excellent question, and it's one that we get a lot. And it kind of brings us to a great difference between the functions of a gallery and a museum. The museum's role is to collect, preserve, present, and interpret the art, in our case. And we aren't selling. We aren't acting as a selling agent. Mm-hmm. If a visitor were to visit the museum and saw a label that said collection of the artist, had, you know, extreme interest in connecting with an artist, most of them have websites, then would happily take an email or a phone call. But we will take someone in, you know, an inquiry, their information, pass it along to an artist. That's really the extent of what the Woodson would do. We're not acting as a selling agent by any means.
And Larry, I can't resist the temptation to say that the Jewels of Nature is on sale at the museum, and it is wonderfully illustrated by many, many fine photographers from Wisconsin.
That's right.
And so that's one place you can get it, and it's available. I think we have a link to it on our Facebook page as well, but any bookstore is going to have, you're going to be able to order it from any bookstore.
Right.
For sure. And I just want to, here we are running out of time, so I want to just remind you all that this Birds and Art exhibition is really on view until November 29th.
Correct.
At the Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum. Go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. There's a link to the museum. You can, you know, find out how to get there. There's some nice photography, photos of what's going on at the art exhibit and other parts of the museum as well. And on Thursday, that's tomorrow, isn't it? Yeah, it is tomorrow.
It is.
So we've got something going on there. You're going to be presenting programs. Is it Thursday? Yeah, you'll be talking, Ellen, right?
Yeah.
I'm talking tomorrow night at 5:30, and that's talking about some of the anecdotes from Jewels of Nature, from the book and some of the other species, but of course an opportunity for any in the audience to ask questions and to interact with me as well at that time. And then on Friday night, we have the panel with Ray Reeser and Eric Anderson from UWSP joining me to talk about the habitat changes from past, present to future, and how that's affecting our bird populations. Then Saturday afternoon, beginning at 1 o'clock, we have a field trip through the museum. We'll focus that primarily on children, but if there are adults that want to come, they're certainly welcome. And we'll just look around at some of the displays, some of the works of art, and talk about the species that are illustrated in those works of art, and answer questions and just chat about those species and some characteristics about them, where they live, what they do, and other kinds of fun things that people may have questions about.
Well, it's been wonderful to have you both with us today, and I know it's going to be a real treat. I'll be up there. I won't make it this weekend, but I'll be there, believe me, to see the exhibition. I rarely miss it, as a matter of fact. So,
good.
Katie,
I look forward to having you.
Yeah, Katie, thank you so much. Alan, thank you so much as well. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome, Larry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Katie Anderson, Museum Curator of Education at the Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum. Alan Haney, great guy, wildlife ecologist, UW Stevens Point Emeritus Professor, former Dean of the College of Natural Resources there. So I'll tell you what, if you've got a chance, get up there and visit and see it. There's a lot to see. But don't leave yet, because don't jump in the car right this minute, because we're going to be talking about our wetlands. Spend a little time talking about that with Katie Belfis of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, and Jessica Strand, wetland specialist from the Bad River Tribe's Natural Resources Department, next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.